Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Happy with the way the world is heading? Don't buy this book. Understand why you do what you do? Don't buy this book. At peace with your existence? Don't buy this book. Content with your relationships? Don't buy this book. The follow-up to The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F*** by Mark Manson is finally here. Everything is F***, a book about hope, out now.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. And as I said every time, we're so grateful for your support. I hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it.
We do. Thanks, Dad. How are you?
I'm extremely well. It's been a bit hot. Mind you, everybody's been hot. And I'm pleased that we might see just the odd respite from the fierceness of the sun. But I haven't been overly worried about it. But then I have the good fortune of not having to go to an office.
Yeah, you've got two good things on your side. One is no commuting. Commuting's the worst one. I don't take the tube in this weather.
No.
Because I take the bus and I also go to work really early.
So yeah.
It stops it being so bad.
I went out at 8 o'clock. I had a breakfast meeting on Tuesday and I went out to walk to it at about 8. And it was actually very pleasant. It was not at all nasty.
It's nice in the mornings. It just gets very... Yeah, and our office doesn't have air conditioning, so it's extremely hot in there. And we have almost floor-to-ceiling windows. So even with the shutters down, the sun just beating through those from about 8 till 1.
Yeah.
That really heats the place up.
Well, I keep my shutters in the flat closed all the time.
Yeah.
Deliberately.
Yeah, it makes a difference.
Just to make it keep it cool. It's because I don't have air conditioning.
We're just not designed for it, heat.
No.
Although, interestingly, the 243 bus, which is the bus I get, has air conditioning.
That's wonderful.
So, sometimes very pleasant getting on the 243.
Yes. Well, I came back from Harrogate on a sort of air-conditioned train, which was pretty sweaty, but it wasn't too bad. Railways are all over the place. I also went this week to visit my mother in Bournemouth. Fortunately, touch wood, you know, the air-conditioning was working and it wasn't too bad.
Wasn't too bad.
No.
Yeah, that was the day before the hottest, or Thursday.
That's right.
And Friday was the
hottest days.
But,
I seem to have been on a lot of trains recently. Mm. I'm trying not to go on one again soon. Enough trains, Ed.
Yeah, well, you don't like going away that much anyway, do you?
No, I'm not a huge fan of travelling. And I don't want to learn any new cities. I don't want to, you know, why not go to Krakow for the weekend? I can think of lots of reasons why I don't want to go to Krakow, or indeed anywhere else. Budapest.
Yeah, I know you say that though, but if I was like, I can get you business class to with drivers in air-conditioned cars to another beautiful place on the cruise.
Well, I had that. I once went to Dubai on that kind of deal.
I know, but you don't like Dubai. I wasn't going to say Dubai. I was going to say, like, you know, if I could take you to Tuscany and put you in a villa for a week where you had everything you needed, probably go for it.
I quite like Tuscany, but it is overpopulated by Germans and Brits. It's like going to, you know, might as well go to London, you know. I mean, everywhere in Tuscany is completely overrun.
What I'm trying to say is that, you know, if you could get somewhere really nice.
Oh,
when
sure.
You say I don't want to discover a new city.
I don't mind. I like Cannes. I'm very fond of Cannes.
I know you like Cannes.
Yeah, I think it's great. I like it. I prefer it to Nice. I really do like Cannes.
I know you do.
It's a very, very nice city.
Yeah.
With a lot of charm.
It's good fun.
And the Croisette has got a lot of...
I'm trying to think of other cities I would like to be in right now. I can think of loads, so I'd be up for it.
Oh, well, if you're thinking about...
I've never been to Rome.
Oh, no, neither have I.
Well, there's one.
Yeah, I've never been to Rome.
I haven't been much to Italy. I've been to Venice, obviously.
Yes.
I haven't been to Florence.
Oh, Florence is now, is it tragic? I mean, there are so many long crocodiles of Chinese, all led by a woman holding up an umbrella. The only way you can get into the Uffizi is to go there first thing in the morning or last thing in the evening when they've all gone back to their hotels. The place is swamped. It used to be absolutely wonderful.
When did you go there?
First time, 72. Yeah, long time ago now. When it was magical. Utterly, utterly magical.
What about Berlin?
Haven't been to Berlin since 1968.
It might be cool to go to Berlin now. Berlin's kind of hip. I reckon you'd do pretty well in Berlin.
Yeah. Night train to Berlin, that'd be good.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that.
Geoffrey, for all the fuss he's making about trains, actually really likes trains and travel. We travelled by train a lot when we were...
I like trains. I like the TGV in France, and I like the AVE in Spain.
The AVE in Spain.
Yeah.
You can get from Madrid to Seville in 2 hours.
Yes.
Seville's a city we like.
Very much so. Very, very nice city.
Seville's a great city.
Yeah.
And Madrid, we went on a lovely holiday together to Madrid.
Yes, we did.
And Paris, you like Paris?
I do. I like the Travellers Club in Paris. I like lots of things about Paris.
Mm.
Except not in August.
No,
it's not the time to go to Paris.
It's not a month for Paris, okay. Agreed. Agreed. That's why no Parisians are there in August.
That's right. They all go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, very wisely, I'd have thought.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we should get on with it, shouldn't we? Because you said it's a long. There's a lot of detail.
Yes.
Does everyone remember that in the last one we decided just through the power of Google that we would do Jack the Stripper,
also known as the Hammersmith Nude Murders. It's the beginning of the swinging 60s, after the Lady Chatterley trial, after the Beatles' first LP. The year is 1964. And a number of prostitutes operating in West London are killed in a dramatic manner. The first known victim, and I will come back, there were two earlier victims, but they weren't identified until after the first six. The first known victim was a young woman, 21, and she was found on the 2nd of February 1964. She came from Northumberland. She was called Hannah Tailford. She was found on the foreshore. She was naked.
The foreshore of the Thames.
Foreshore of the Thames.
Is that like one of those weird little beach sort
That's
of
right.
areas?
Exactly.
Like outside the Tate Modern.
Or outside one of the boathouses where you take out Oxford
Oh,
Cambridge.
So further. So where?
We're just west of Hammersmith Bridge. She was strangled. And one of the hallmarks of the man who was later dubbed Jack the Stripper was that he knocked her teeth out. He took teeth as souvenirs. Her underwear was stuffed down her throat, but she was actually drowned.
Yikes.
She was, of course, as I said, naked. Barely 2 months later, on the 8th of April, another young woman, this time 25, called Irene Lockwood, was found very near to where Hannah had been found. She too had been stripped. She too had her teeth knocked out, some of her teeth knocked out, and she too had been drowned. In neither of those two attacks was there any evidence whatever of sexual attack. None. Just like Bible John. There was no evidence of rape.
Bible John did rape.
The second two, maybe not the first.
Yeah.
Interestingly about this whole case is that it's all about violence. It is not about sex.
Maybe that's why he attacked prostitutes. Maybe he didn't like sex.
Maybe. Certainly a possibility. A few days later, in April 1964, a third girl, a third woman, aged 22, is found in an alley off Boston Manor Road in Brentwood. Same bit of West London, but just further back from the river. She too had been stripped. She too had teeth missing. And she too had been strangled. They all had some evidence of strangulation, but the first two were certainly drowned. She was nowhere near water, this one.
Oh.
Helen Bartholomew, she was called. She came from East Lothian. Interestingly, the next three victims all came from Scotland. And there's a lot of speculation that the murderer, the killer, knew them or lived nearby.
Probably did know them in some way.
Yes, it's highly likely that there was a connection. Remember, we're long before the BAU and profiling and all that. This is 1964. We're talking about...
You don't have DNA or anything then, do you?
Almost nothing. And also, there was no Holmes, big major incident computers. There was nothing. There was card indexes.
Mm.
And it took a long time for the dots to be joined up that we're looking at a serial killer here.
Yeah. What was the communication like between the different like police forces and areas?
Very poor.
Yeah.
But to be fair, in this particular case, a lot of them were within the same police district. So we weren't talking about something that happened in East London being connected to something in West London. We're talking about a pretty finite area. Well, as we know only too well, profiling now always talks about a killer has an area.
Yeah.
You know, a stalking ground.
We talked about it last time. Yeah.
It's as classic as a lifetime of petty theft growing into being harsh to animals and then arson and all that. Always within an area.
Mm.
And as we'll come to see later, one or two of the suspects that the police identified were very much within the area. Edge of Hammersmith, mm-hmm. River, back into Brentford.
Okay. Was the West... I know it's the 60s and not the Victorian times, but it was like everywhere... Because you know how along the river in East London are kind of like Wapping and Shad Thames and stuff like that was a sort of seedy, opium-y sort of Victorian... kind of Sherlock Holmes
Dr.
style.
Fu Manchu, yeah. Famously. Roma's famous villain.
Was all along the banks of the river kind of seedy?
No.
Like west and east, no, or not it, like that?
Not really. I mean, if you look at... I lived in Putney before this and after it. And West London, that stretch of the river, was actually very respectable.
Mm.
Going from Putney to, say, Mortlake. Now, Mortlake High Street was remarkably respectable. Yes, it had a brewery, but it also was rather middle class. No, this wasn't Shad Thames. This was not Limehouse.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
This was quite, quite different. Quite respectable. Semi-detached houses leading down to the river. Not back-to-backs, not, you know, dreadful housing at all. Anyway, the second killing in April is followed by a fourth killing in July. This time, a woman called Mary Fleming, aged 30. She too was from Scotland, from Clydebank. And one of the things about this case is that, and there are a number of interesting illustrations in this case, is that she'd been missing for 3 days. She went missing on the 11th and was found on the 14th of July. And she was found outside number 48 Barramead Road, Chiswick, same part of West London. Once again, as there had been on Helen Bartholomew, there were small smudges of paint on her, flecks of paint, quite a distinctive sort of paint, a kind of industrial paint. She too had been stripped, she too had been strangled.
Did you have pants in her throat?
No. The fifth victim in this first sequence is a woman called Frances Brown, but was also known as Margaret McGowan. Like a lot of prostitutes at the time, they had several different aliases. She was almost certainly 21. And she disappeared. The last sighting of her alive was on the 23rd of October, but she wasn't found until the 25th of November.
That's much longer time.
It is a very long time. And it's interesting that it's pretty clear that the killer was storing the bodies somewhere. We have yet to
and
discover
quite. Keeping them longer each time.
Longer each time. She too, again, was strangled.
But that could be because he'd got into a pattern and he didn't want to keep like killing them and dumping them straight away because it would have been easier to catch if he...
This time, Francis or Margaret was seen getting into a car when she disappeared, the last sighting. And that gave the police the only photo fit they had. That up until that moment, the killer was a mystery, a ghost, someone who came and went, and they had no idea who it was. Now, remember, he's killed 5 women within a space of a year.
I'm just Googling it because you had the picture up before.
Yes, if you look at the Wikipedia, you'll get it.
Yeah, I've got it.
It's a sort of round-faced man with shortish hair.
Yeah.
A slightly pudgy.
Yeah. And all his features are kind of quite squashed together.
Squashed together, yes.
In the middle of his face.
And that becomes important when we begin to look at...
There's quite a lot of stuff about it.
Oh, there is, yes.
There's a very good picture here of a sort of top cop John DeRose on the shore of the Thames just beneath the old ship.
Yep.
That was somewhere they found a body, wasn't it?
Chief Superintendent John DeRose was the investigating officer.
He looks like the sort of Winston Churchill of police officers.
Yes, he was very upright indeed. Now, the interesting thing about Francis Brown, and it's one of the many strange undercurrents in the story of Jack the Stripper, is that she was a friend of Christine Keeler and Mandy Rice Davies, the two prostitutes who were called to the defence of the osteopath Stephen Ward in the wake of what was known as the Profumo Affair.
Oh.
She gave evidence in Ward's defence. There are a great many undercurrents in this story.
Yeah.
It's been suggested, for example, that several of the victims had appeared at parties, you know, expensive parties.
Sort of like escort type.
Yeah. And some of them had almost certainly taken part in making homemade porn films.
Mm.
It's that kind of undercurrent there was, you know, apparently respectable society. In fact, it wasn't respectable.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that there are certain links to these cases, which goes back to the point that I think quite a lot of the victims knew each other. The final of the 6 victims in this slew is a woman called Bridget O'Hara, who came from Dublin, which was 28, and she was found dead on the 16th of February 1965 in a storage shed in Acton, in what was known as the Heron Factory Estate. Once again, she was strangled. Once again, flecks of paint. Once again, she'd been missing for more than a month. She was last seen alive on the 11th of January, and her body wasn't discovered until the 16th of February. Interestingly, too, the body was hidden in a transformer, something that helped generate electricity, and had been kept warm. There's some indication that the victims had either been kept alive or had been stored for long periods.
I'm just going to go back to my favourite thing, which is like the practicalities of what that means. If you keep a body warm and it's dead...
It mummifies.
It mummifies.
Yes.
It doesn't like go all bloated and leaky.
No, it mummifies.
Oh.
It's... We don't know.
But she could have been alive.
She's possible. Both the first victim, Hannah Tailford, and Francis Brown had connections to the Profumo affair. I think others did too. And I think it was this, I suppose you would call it underground, underworld. We still have the Crays, we still have the Richardsons, we still have, you know, the big London gangs. It's a very seedy scene.
There could be that kind of undercurrent, but that would suggest, well, there's two things. One would be like they were doing something wrong, or they knew information they shouldn't know, and so someone had to get rid of them. But these are all the hallmarks of a serial killer. So it may just be someone who had a lust for killing who happened to be in those circles, and they seemed like easy targets because, you know, as we know, people on the edges of society are easy targets to the homeless, you know, people, sex workers, drug addicts, etc., kind of traditionally.
Yeah, and they're easy targets.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, they make themselves available. I mean, they're out there working.
Yeah, yeah. They would actively put themselves in the position where they
And they're in a position of danger.
Yeah.
Interestingly, where the first victim of the six, Hannah, was found, is a famous spot on the River Thames, which is now famous for dogging. It's a very well-known site. These days, policed very heavily, of course, but not all those years ago. Very easily accessible from the road as well. Interestingly. Now, I'd better just say now that after the killings, this spate of killings, Jack the Stripper, as he was dubbed, stopped.
And this was 65.
Early 65. He stopped dead. Sorry, no pun intended. Now, there are a whole series of possibilities here. At one point, the police had a man called Kenneth Archibald, a 57-year-old caretaker at the Holland Park Tennis Club, who walked into the police station and confessed to killing Irene Lockwood, the second of the batch of six. They accepted his confession, took him to trial, and guess what?
Found him guilty of all the murders.
No.
No?
He changed his plea.
Oh.
He said, I'm not guilty. And the only evidence they had was the confession. So he was set free.
Oh.
He was acquitted without fail or without any hesitation. But the second person who became a suspect was a man called Mungo Ireland.
Hey London, it's the weekend. And here at Now TV, we take your free time seriously. That's why we've got loads of the latest shows and movies. There's Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. Zac Efron plays Ted Bundy, the notoriously charming serial killer. Or plenty of glitz and glamour in the south of France. Until things start exploding in the gripping drama Riviera. So whatever you're in the mood for, Now TV's got you covered. 18 plus month passes auto renew, terms apply.
A Scottish security guard, a very respectable married man who worked at the Heron factory estate in Acton. Chief Superintendent DuRose identified him in a television interview, and shortly afterwards, Ireland killed himself. Now, he left a note for his wife saying, and I quote, I can't stick it any longer. And just to save yourself and the police any trouble, I'll be in the garage. He killed himself with carbon monoxide. Now, he was often seen as the principal suspect. After all, he's identified, he takes his own life. It makes sense. Two and two make four, at least in that stage of police
investigation. And they don't have any other leads at all.
They have no other leads at all. I want to go back now, just a moment or two. Before the killing of Hannah Telford, the first of the identified Jack the Stripper killings, there had been two very similar killings of prostitutes. One in 1959, a girl called Elizabeth Figg, who was found in, she was 21, and she was found in Duke's Meadow in Chiswick, very close to where Hannah's body was found. About 200 yards west of Barnes Bridge. Her underwear, her black stiletto shoes and her white handbag were all missing, and her dress had been torn so that her breasts were revealed. She'd been killed between 12 and 2 a.m., between midnight and 2 a.m., and there was a sighting by a publican on the other side of the river at Mortlake High Street, who said he'd remembered seeing a car's lights and hearing a woman scream. It wasn't connected to the stripper killings for some years. And interestingly, in November 1963, on the, if you like, on the eve of the official stripper killings, another young prostitute called Gwyneth Reese, 22, was found, her body was found on a refuse disposal site in Mortlake, about 40 yards from the towpath and about a mile from where Hannah had been found. Later, these two victims were identified as the work of Jack the Stripper. She again was naked, but for a single stocking on her right leg, which had been rolled down to the ankle. She was evidence, again, of the extraordinary appetite for violence that the killer had. All the women badly beaten before they were killed. And this one, poor Gwyneth Reese, was decapitated by a shovel.
Oh, that's horrible.
On the refuse site. Yet again, as in every other killing, there was no sexual attack. In fact, Gwyneth had disappeared at the end of September and was gone for pretty much all of the month of October. Wasn't found until November 1963. I think that's another of Jack the Stripper's signatures. He keeps the bodies somewhere, or he keeps them alive somewhere. Not easy to do.
No.
So when Mungo Ireland, the Scottish security guard, took his own life, a good deal of the impetus for the Jack the Stripper inquiry began to wane. There were all manner of extraordinary theories. One of my favourites was, at that point, a very well-known British boxer called Freddie Mills, who had owned a Chinese restaurant and was a great friend of the Krays, as well as part of the underworld scene, and was known in that background as a sexual sadist. Among the criminal class at that point, a lot of people said, oh, Freddie did it. They're all Freddies. And significantly, Mills was found shot dead in July 1965. Certainly suicide. Now, that's the second suicide in this case.
Yeah. Although not necessarily a direct relation.
No, it might be entire coincidence. I'm not suggesting for a moment one way or the other.
But it could have been.
It's possible. It's one of the famous explanations.
Yeah.
And yet again, as in Bible John, there is another possible explanation. Guess what?
A police officer.
There have been several suggestions that senior officers involved in the investigation covered up who was killing because it was a policeman. In fact, a documentary made in the early noughties, in 2002, actually named a policeman. It was Superintendent Tommy Butler of the Flying Squad, who died in 1970. Now, I have no way of knowing whether or not there's any truth in that at all, but he was nevertheless, has been identified publicly as a potential suspect to be Jack the Stripper. Again.
I mean, how corrupt was the police force?
Considerable corruption. It took a long time for the Metropolitan Police to regain its reputation. I mean, we are talking about the era of the bent drug squad. We are talking about the era of bent detectives. It wasn't until Sir Robert Mark really took over at the Met that you began to see it cleansed of some terrible corruption.
And that's all just because people have just got inside people in everywhere, don't they?
Absolutely. And there's a very thin line. It was a wonderful... I remember being taken to a drinking club by Jeremy Beadle, later television, now no longer sadly with us, and it was run by his dad, and it was absolutely full of criminals and police officers. Because you couldn't drink, you had, you know, the pubs closed at 3.
Yeah.
And they didn't open again until 5:30. And so they wanted to go somewhere to drink, and they all went to them. It was amazing.
They were all together.
They were always together. And the identification was very close. But recently, I think probably the most telling possibility has begun to emerge. I have two friends who are making a documentary about it for the BBC at the moment about this whole case. And this came about because a man in Wales was researching the killing of two young girls, by a 15-year-old boy called Harold Jones. The killings took place in 1921. Harold Jones was too young to be sentenced to death, and so was imprisoned. But he was released after 20 years. He left Abertillery, where the two killings had taken place, and reinvented himself as Harry Stevens in Fulham, West London. He was there, still known as Harry Stevens, until the first proper wave of stripper murders began to emerge, and then he disappeared again. Changed his name, almost certainly. He was living around the parts of West London where several of the victims lived. Now, so did Mungo Ireland, interestingly. But the police at this point didn't know about Harold Jones. They didn't know they had another killer two streets away. They had no way of knowing. Abertillery is an awfully long way from West London. Mm. And no dots were connected. But it's true to say that the killings of the two girls in Abertillery were remarkably similar. No sexual attack. Extreme violence. And it was asserted that Jones confessed to a prison medical officer that his only real sexual excitement was from gross violence. He didn't need any kind of actual sexual contact. He got an excitement from the sheer use of violence, particularly directed against women.
Well, that sounds like a interesting theory to look into.
At one point, he certainly told a prison medical officer that he had a desire to kill. Now, Harold Jones married and had a daughter and died of bone cancer in 1970. He was buried in a plot, an unmarked plot, 13 in Hammersmith Cemetery. And it's to that plot that a lot of attention has recently been focused. Was Harold Jones actually Jack the Stripper? Mm. And could it be that finally we can put two and two together? We never had any DNA. We never had any fingerprints. It's circumstantial, but it's powerful.
Yeah.
It's a powerful, powerful argument. Jones was dead by 1971. So all the potential suspects
were dead.
All gone. Not unlike Jack the Ripper, where all the potential suspects seem to disappear into thin air. In Jack the Stripper, the same is true. Jack the Stripper, nevertheless, attracted a considerable amount of attention at the time. A lot of headlines. And in particular, he inspired quite a famous novel called Goodbye Piccadilly, Farewell Leicester Square by Arthur Laburn, which was turned into a film by Alfred Hitchcock called Frenzy, starring Barry Foster.
Oh, really?
As a potential serial killer.
Oh, interesting.
Jack the Stripper remains one of the most interesting and mysterious of the serial killers, who isn't much remembered.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers Jack the Ripper.
He's not well known, no. But that's quite a slew of bodies also.
It's eight bodies.
Yeah.
Eight young prostitutes, all dispensed with great violence, no sexual attack, all stripped.
I wonder why he's not as famous as the other ones.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe it was more hidden away then. Was it like publicised? Was it like in the papers and stuff?
Oh, it was a big manhunt. DeRose launched a big manhunt. And it was well publicised, but it wasn't massively publicised. It wasn't the same as Bible John, for example, or the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah. Maybe there's just too much other stuff going on.
I don't know. One of the explanations for why it wasn't as high profile is the impact of what you could describe as the mixture of high society and the underworld.
Mm.
You know, the embassy club and who knew whom and, you know, how many people were involved.
Yeah.
It's possible that it was a cover-up. It's entirely possible. DeRose himself was, without doubt, an incredibly upright police officer. There was no question of corruption on his part. But that's not to say the corruption couldn't be in other parts.
Yeah.
And he did his very best. But in the wake of Ireland's suicide, the impetus went out of the investigation because he ticked so many of the boxes. He worked in a place where the paint had been, you know. But interestingly, Harold Jones also worked at a place where there was that kind of industrial paint. And it's long before we've got that trace evidence. Now we always, you know, CSI's all saying, let's get the trace evidence.
Yeah, we don't have any of that stuff.
None of it. It's very much PC Plod or Dixon of Dot Green we're dealing with here. You know, we're not. It's even before the Sweeney. I mean, the Sweeney is 10 years later.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about Miss Marple here. It's quite a sort of straightforward police force. And they also the thing I said about Bible John is we're talking about a misogynist serial killer. The attitude of the police in those days, more than 50 years ago. At the death of prostitutes or, you know, apparently loose women, was far less significant.
They were just like, well...
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying I wouldn't tar every policeman with that brush.
No.
Of course not. But there was no doubt a strain of misogyny in the police forces across the country. And it took a long time for that to disappear. You've only got to talk to people, for example, who currently deal with rape cases, the women officers, the women police constables and detectives, and they say it took an awfully long time to change the attitudes, the very male-oriented attitude of the police.
Mm.
Oh, it's only a prostitute. Well, actually, these were young women whose lives were terminated.
Yeah.
But I think Jack the Stripper is a genuinely interesting and wonderfully, in that sense, unknown case.
Yeah.
People forget about the Hammersmith nude murders, and it is a remarkable, remarkable case.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Thanks, Dad.
Pleasure. If you can use the word pleasure.
Well, yeah. No, it's just good to be informed.
Yes.
It's a part of our history.
Yes. It's always reported that the last suspect, Harold Jones, did indeed have a daughter, but to my knowledge, that daughter has never appeared. I've never seen her interviewed or...
No one's found her.
No.
Maybe your friends will find her for their documentary.
Maybe. They've been at the documentary for nearly 18 months. So, you know, they spent a lot of time in Abertillery.
It takes a while to get it all together. I'm trying to think back to what... It's really strange us doing these every other week on the same day because I always think I'll be able to remember all the things I said I would go and do and then I can't. I went to a screening of a new show that's going to be on ITV called Strangers with John Sim and Amelia Fox. It was fine.
Good? What is it, 3 parts, 6 parts, 8 parts?
8 parts.
8 parts.
8 parts, pretty tough one.
Crime drama.
Basic premise is, this is not a plot spoiler because this is all revealed in the first episode. Basic premise is John Sim is a university lecturer living in London, I presume, or another UK town. He's married to Derva Kerwin. They got married late in life. They've been married for 3 years. They've no children.
Mm-hmm.
She works in between Hong Kong and London. She is killed in a car crash although something is suspect, so she's leaving a message for John while she is driving the car saying, I think I'm in real trouble, and then she gets hit by a truck. And he goes to Hong Kong to pick up her body, and when he gets there, he discovers that she is already married to another man who she's been married to for 20 years and has a child. And that is the basic premise, but then it's sort of set in Hong Kong and he's trying to discover what actually happened, and there's some kind of seedy underbelly. There's just quite a lot of strands, so it'll be interesting to see how they get it to come together. I think it was a little bit, which English TV is very guilty of. Here are all the smart white people in the posh consulates. And here are all the dirty Chinese people in the, like, seedy underbelly of Hong Kong. And we're not very good. We can't help it.
We can't help our colonialism. Past. That's what I knew you were going to say.
Our colonial past, yes. Is carried with us wherever we go. And it's like a sort of license to be faintly racist. It happens all the time.
It does.
Especially in media,
yeah, stereotyping is a dangerous thing.
Mm.
I've heard that story.
I think that's the issue. Is like, oh, someone finds out their partner has a dual life. Well, that's not like the most
interesting. No,
it's not disinteresting.
But there are a lot of I didn't realise. You know, I've read a lot of those recently.
I saw Tartuffe as well.
Oh, yes, good, because you've got a client in it.
Yes. Which, again, I didn't think was that. I just thought the adaptation was just incredibly schlocky, and any translation into English just was bad, and so it didn't help itself.
No. It's coming off in any moment, isn't it?
Today.
Today, yes. I presume he's got plenty of work, has he?
We're working on it.
Good. Excellent.
Wonderful. What else did I do? What else have I?
I saw Tartuffe, which I didn't like. Any show which starts with 24 minutes of French leaves me struggling slightly.
Well, Dad, it's a French play.
I know.
What's wrong with it being in French?
Well, except it's in London. I'm unreconstructed, as I said last week. There goes the stereotype.
I'm English, and when I go to the theatre, I only like to see. This is ironic, as you could take Jeffrey to the opera and he'd watch the whole of Puccini in Italian and be like, this is delightful.
Yes, you could.
Yeah.
I quite agree. Perhaps it's the French I don't like.
Maybe. I think it probably wasn't the French so much as the production.
What am I going to do this week? I have a mercifully quiet week. It's been very busy the last few weeks, but this one is mercifully quiet. And got a couple of meetings and I've got plenty to do. But I suppose I should go to see Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, should I?
It's got getting rave reviews. Ravo. Yeah. Everyone's loving it.
Yes.
Well, even more than Mamma Mia.
One.
Uno.
Yes, Mamma Mia, Uno. But it's all shot.
I've actually never seen Mamma Mia.
Oh, Uno. I've seen the first.
Oh,
yeah.
Have you? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, you should take Diana. I bet she'd love it.
Yeah, well, I'm very keen to go. I know she is.
And could go this weekend.
I'm going to a party, I think, tomorrow.
Oh.
I don't have any great plans. But you sent me some dates for plays, which I'll sort out with you.
Yeah, I was meant to send you those last week, so I'm a bit behind the curve.
Never mind. And I'd like, if we might, next time...
Oh, yeah?
The next one, to do a more contemporary killing.
Sure.
Not a serial killer this time. This is about a female killer, which, as you know, I find interesting. She's called Tracy Andrews, and she stabbed her fiancé 42 times and then tried to pretend it was a road rage attack.
And that is a lot. She must have been really pissed off with him.
Mm-hmm. And with a penknife.
Oh, God. Like a Swiss Army knife.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure you'll tell me next time.
I will.
Okay, well, on that note, something to look forward to.
Now, you must smile at these, because otherwise you'll go absolutely potty. And there is always some humour in it somewhere, no matter how awful. And Jack the Stripper was an awful killer.
Yeah, true. Very true. Okay, well, thank you, Dad. And, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Molly.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.